Welcome to the Africa Speaking Podcast. The podcast discusses critical issues about the African continent. It is brought to you by Teresa Communications in Nairobi.
Discover a surprising solution to climate change. Welcome to the first episode of our two-part series. I'm your host, Maslin Nyambala. And today I'm speaking with the bold, insightful young Gen Z leader, Laura Koech. We'll be unearthing the power of bamboo tree farming in our mission to build adaptation and real community resilience against climate change. Get ready to be inspired. Welcome, Laura. I'm so excited to host you.
Thank you so much.
You're one of the young ladies who are doing work on climate change in agriculture. Please tell us about yourself and how you got to be doing this and some of your interests.
So I was spent the first 6 years of my life in Nakuru County, in a place called Olenguruni, deep in the Mau Forest, Mau Hills of the Mau Forest.
Yeah.
And growing up, you know, I saw the Cheptwech River in its full surge of water.
Yes.
But so I was born and raised in Olenguruni for the first 6 years. Mm-hmm. And then we moved to Nairobi. And then I went to high school in Kabarak in Nakuru, again, yes. Hometown.
Yes.
And then after that, I got the chance to go abroad for university.
Yes.
I went to Yale University in the US, and I got my degree in psychology in 2021.
Yes.
And then I spent about a year and a half out there working in various nonprofits and just generally, you know, shifting around roles. I worked with a nonprofit agency that worked with refugees, and then I worked with a marketing agency. It was actually like a cold day in February, and I had moved to New York with the hope that, you know, everyone talks about New York, like this
yes.
is a great place to live. If you're young, if you get the chance, you should go there, you know. But I was in New York and I was cold, and I was living in the part of Manhattan and working in the bottom half of it and having to cross with the subway every day. I don't know, just one morning walking back after, because I worked in a basement building, so I'd go in when the sun was up and then I'd come out at 5 p.m. and the sun had set about like an hour before.
Wow.
So, you know,
at what time would you go in?
At like 8 in the morning, no sunshine because it's cloudy, but then you come
winter.
Out it's
mm.
winter, you come out and it's dark. It gets you to question your life choices a bit.
Yeah.
And so after 6 years, it was time to come home, and I came home necessarily without a plan. I just knew that I needed to be at home. And so I came home and, you know, found short gigs, working at a law firm, in their marketing department, and working with an investment firm that, you know, invested in petroleum products. But then it wasn't quite, I have been told that I don't do very well with rigid 9-to-5s.
Yeah.
And so I needed something that was a bit more flexible. And we've had, you know, a patch of land available close to home that has been somewhat underutilized.
Yes.
Since my father had a failed stint with cow, you know,
livestock.
Yeah, like you have to be there
but
anyway, so it was since unused with all the infrastructure, you know, there's a water well, there's all these things that were underutilized. And so as I was in between things and were looking for the next step, I was like, let me go home, let me go figure out what to do.
All right,
so I got home, and I don't know, in general conversations, because my parents are very logical people, they were like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? And so I had to tell them I'm going to do something, you know?
Yeah.
And so I told them... In general conversations, and also, you know, any parent when your Ivy League educated daughter is telling you they want to go home to the village, you start to ask yourself, why? What are
wow.
you going to do?
Yeah.
And so my mother's a very high-powered you know, professional, and so
yeah.
she needed to make sense to her.
What are your parents doing?
She's an engineer by training.
Yeah.
And has worked in engineering adjacent fields.
Okay.
So she is very heavily invested in the space.
Academic.
Yes.
Okay.
And my father is a businessman. He's a tea farmer. But anyway, so it needed to make sense to them. And so in order to get them off my back, I had to tell them something. And so I told them I'm going home to do bamboo, honey, and mushrooms.
Yeah.
And so when they asked, okay, what about bamboo, is when I had to go researching. And this was, you know, had been inspired by a short trip, you know, traveling around the world and seeing all these people all over the world utilizing the same products that we have, but utilizing them in a very innovative way.
Yeah.
And so you see countries like China and Japan have entire cities built out of entirely of bamboo, full construction.
So
and
you're saying the building itself?
Yes.
The building is...
A house, people build
the roof, the roof,
everything,
structure.
Yes, yeah. It's okay. A very versatile crop, like tree.
Mm.
And so, in order to, you know, make it make sense, so we then, with their encouragement, being like, so is it viable? Can we do it in Kenya? So we went to speak with the experts. We actually have a bamboo expert at KEFRI, whose time is entirely dedicated to help Kenyans who are seeking to venture into this space.
Yeah.
And so we went and spoke to the bamboo expert who put us in touch with... There's about five players, the five industry companies, people, you know, organizations that are doing bamboo. And we had a chance to visit a number of them and saw what people are doing with bamboo in Kenya. And that's where I bought the first sample or the first, you know, pilot study or the pilot batch of, it was 100, we started with 100 and then 1,000. And then I bought some seeds, but we can talk about that.
You bought a what?
I bought 100 seedlings.
100 seedlings.
Yes, to test out whether it would, you know, it would catch, whether they would die. And then once those were planted and I had secured a bit of funding to continue the project is when now we bought, you know, the next batch of 1,000 seedlings. And then we bought actual seeds that we were going to sow and put them, make ourselves into seedlings.
Amazing. So now that is how your bamboo farming...
That's how it started.
So tell us, this bamboo project,
yes.
Where exactly is it? And after you farm, have you had the harvest?
No.
You've just started.
We've just started. So bamboo takes 3 to 5 years to grow.
3 to 5 years.
Which is, you know, also a side positive note because all the other tree products that people are planting at best take 7 to 15 years. You know, eucalyptus, pine, cypress, etc. Mm. And then you harvest once for those ones. But anyway, I'm very excited about that. But the specific locality that I am working with, I have decided to, you know, localize my focus, you know, generally to the Mau Forest, and not the inside the boundaries that are under the protection and care of the Kenya Forest Service, but rather the environs, you know, that are part of the general Mau water catchment area.
Yeah.
And the bulk of the Mau, it's split between Kuresoi North South. Yeah, Kuresoi North and South. So my home sub-county nowadays is what we are calling it, yes. My home sub-county is Kuresoi South.
Kuresoi South,
And so that's where I have the bulk of the focus is. And, you know, that encompasses a huge area that includes the whole teenage section.
And so why the Mau escarpment? What is the significance of the Mau?
So personally for me, it's because it's home.
Yeah.
It is where I grew up. It is where my grandparents, my parents, you know, I can trace back three generations at minimum.
Yeah.
And hopefully more coming ahead. But on like a general, it just so I just so happened to luck out that it was home for me, but also it's such a huge important water catchment area for the country.
Yeah.
The source of the Ewaso Nyira River and the source of the Mara River are in the Mau Forest.
Mm.
And thankfully, that specific water, it's a swamp, essentially, like the source of the Mau, those two rivers, it's a huge swamp in the center of the forest. And thankfully, that specific area is heavily protected.
Yeah.
But around it, you know, all the other waters feed in, all the other tributaries of those two rivers and all the other rivers are sourced from the Mau.
But you also mentioned that there was a river that
Yes.
Used to flow. What is the state of that river now?
The Chepchwech River is a major tributary of the Mara River. Is currently in a state in which, you know, it's dry. It's almost a trickle.
Yeah.
And we used to collect wood, you know, it used to be, that's where people used to get their drinking water. And now, you know, people are having to find other sources. It's not only is it a trickle now, but it's also heavily, it's dead essentially. There's not much life happening, and that's because of the downflow of contamination essentially with pesticides, fertilizers, etc. Yeah. And that's just the one thing that the bamboos are good at. It's like they're good filtration systems. You know, they clean up the rivers. So when you build them at the bottom of when you plant them at the bottom of your property, bordering the river, all the runoff that comes from the top of the hill is cleaned by the roots before it gets to the river.
So now, you are farming bamboos?
Yes.
Are you farming alone or you are working with others?
So I am working with farmers. The end goal of the project, we just started. And in the starting, I have, you know, done it with the property that I have access to, and also just general properties that I have access through family, like my grandparents' properties, because they border the river, and in the villages, the small villages that those people are in. So the goal is it will be eventually to work on a somewhat outgrower program, you know, the same way the tea farm model, where farmers, you know, of their own volition, plant the bamboo, and then they shall sell to me or to a cooperative factory that we shall set up. And then that cooperative factory will then either process it itself or sell to the other players in the market.
Okay.
But yes, the goal is to work with at least 70% of the farmers that have property bordering the rivers in the water catchment area, but also just generally any other farmer that has a spare, you know, bit of dead land. It's very good for utilization of the dead corners of land.
And you didn't mention your company.
Yes, it's called Tehat Industries, which means Tehat means is bamboo in Kalenjin. Tekhat.
Maybe if you could share a little bit more or from your research. Mm-hmm. Of the potential things that this cooperative could help the farmers market into, to the utilization, you know, the value the bamboo will bring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the thing with bamboo is that anything that you can make with wood, you can make with bamboo.
Yeah.
It's a very versatile crop. And not only that, but now the value add to the farmer is that with all these other trees that people are planting, is that they take, you know, as I mentioned earlier, like 7 to 12 years, and then you harvest them once, you know. Now the thing with the bamboo, it's called a calm plant, is that you have shoots that are growing constantly.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so you can harvest every 6 months for up to 70 years. Every 6 months you're harvesting at least 7 to 10 of the poles, you know, and then you're selling them.
So intergenerational.
Intergenerational.
One generation and another generation can benefit.
Yes. Depending on the species, right? Yeah. It can be 70 plus, about 70, definitely more than 70 years. That's just, you know, off the cuff, just the benefit. But, you know, like people have trees constantly, like fencing, and there's other, you know, products. So personally, I will be hoping to focus to both, you know, pre-prepare the bamboo with the farmers that I'll be working with to then sell them to the other players in the market. And so we have people who are making flowboards in Narok with the bamboo. And there's
flowboards,
yes. Mm. And there's a group that is based in Western that are actively making they've already started. They're making baskets, they're making ceiling boards. They're made on order, you know. A client comes to them and asks for a specific product. They make chairs, they make all of these things, but they're investing heavily to start making toothpicks and skewers out of that.
Okay.
Personally, I will be hoping to go into single-use utensils,
yeah.
The single-use plates, spoons, knives, etc. Mm. Particularly because I'm also invested in plastic reduction.
Yeah,
you know, in this whole general climate change
yes.
fight.
Yeah,
and so I feel like in doing that, I'll be killing two birds with one stone.
Yes.
That's where I'm hoping to get to in 5 to 7 years.
Like, mm.
And so it gives me this having just started. It gives me enough time for as the plants and the bamboo are growing, and as we continue planting more, as we stagger them, of course, is then by the time this first batch is ready, I shall be in a position to then keep my promise to the farmers
yeah.
and buy the bamboo from them.
So far, how is the uptake?
Uptake with the farmers?
Yeah.
Excited,
mm.
very enthusiastic.
Yeah. How long have you been at it?
About a year,
yes.
About 8 months,
yeah.
you know, roughly, since I'm counting down from the time when I, you know, got the funding to fully like go into it. So it's about a year since I started,
about
8 months since I got the funding to continue. As I said, I did it with myself and like family and the sort of direct neighbors that we have in those family areas. But then I went, you know, round to the general village that I live in, and I visited about 50 farmers. Not all of them having riparian land, but that's just general farmers that I live with.
Yeah.
And, you know, gave them each one bamboo, and each of them was like, so when am I getting the next one, you know? And then I had to be like, you know, you have to give me about 6 to 8 months to get the seedlings.
You've given them one first for them to plant.
I gave them one first for them to plant each.
Okay.
And then they'll come and, you know, get
what
some.
Is the impact of one?
The one bamboo seedling, it grows into this huge thing. So all of those numbers I was telling you where you're harvesting 6 to 10 poles.
Yeah.
You know, is from that one.
Yeah.
Every 6 months you can harvest 10 poles for 70 years.
All right.
And so if you have more than one, then that multiplies in that order of magnitude.
Okay. So what are some of the climate challenges, some of these farmers that you're talking about? And you've already alluded to some that we have seen. The rivers are drying.
Yes.
There is a lot of chemical.
Yes.
Maybe you could mention some of the issues that farmers around the region are facing.
Yes, the rivers are drying, the soils are degraded, and the rainfall is becoming unpredictable. And a lot of those are, you know, greater global challenges that we are all facing. But the drying rivers is being exacerbated by the fact that, and I've mentioned this, I have a huge fight with eucalyptus that farmers have planted in riparian areas and also just generally. And so the solution here with the bamboo mainly is threefold. Just adding more tree cover in any area. Did you know that we have the 6th lowest forest cover in the continent?
Yeah, yes.
You know?
6th lowest in the continent.
In the continent.
Yeah, we are doing badly.
We're doing worse than
our water is scarce. Semi-arid.
We're doing worse than Sudan.
6th lowest.
In Africa with
we are doing badly.
We're doing badly. Is it 5 to 6% now? And you can see it being cut. But anyway, so... And that is definitely heavily impacting the rainfall patterns, And so just on the sheer number of just having more tree cover, like that's just the one-off. And then now it goes down into the specifics of bamboo biology and what it can do in terms of filtration of this water.
Mm-hmm.
A huge number of the farmers that I gave those that one bamboo are like very eager about planting it close to their to their boreholes. And in that sense, it'll filter those boreholes or it'll filter the runoff going into those boreholes and reducing the impact of all this fertilizers and whatnot, chemicals they're using in the water that they're drinking. But the superstition amongst the people also is that the bamboo calls the water. And, so if you plant it next to a borehole, the superstition goes that your borehole will have more water just by the nature of the bamboo.
Once you put bamboo,
it pulls the water.
Your borehole has more.
Yeah.
So the bamboo is cleaning the water.
And it's pulling
the water into the borehole.
Into the borehole.
And now where do you plant it?
The recommendation for us is to find, because we don't want to impact people's lands in a way that they're actively using. It has to be minimally impactful to just their day-to-day utilization. So the recommendation is like just a corner of... And the patch of like, everyone has a patch of unused, a corner somewhere that is inaccessible, that is next to the road, that is, you know, next to the borehole, you know. And so that one corner we're recommending.
But does it have to have water, or it doesn't have to have water?
The roots go deep. They go deep for water, yes.
Even if the water is a little bit far.
Yes. Bamboo is actually recommended to be, it can grow in very degraded soils, and it can work on.
Okay.
Yes. And it's a hardy plant. So the trick is to get the right... So there's about 1,000+ species of bamboo.
Mm,
and so
1,000 species.
More than 1,000. But those we have, the indigenous variants that we have in the forests are harder. So they're good for others. They're good for some uses and not that great for others.
Yeah.
But then we also don't want to be cutting them, let them stay in the forest where they are.
Yeah.
And so we can just plant the ones that we need.
Laura, perhaps you could share with us a little bit about the carbon absorption from your experience so far.
Yes, bamboo absorbs up to 12 tons of carbon dioxide per hectare per year.
Mm.
So that makes it like an excellent carbon sink. And it's different because once you cut the bamboo, it's not like the tree is dead, and therefore you're losing that carbon that had been sequestered all the way back to the atmosphere.
Mm.
It's a perennial plant, so it's like it fixes and sequesters that carbon for longer, a lot more of it.
Yes.
And you never quite actually like lose it back into the atmosphere. So it's a good plantation plant for those who are thinking about, you know, all these carbon opportunities that are coming about, but just on the base level of the reduction of carbon from the atmosphere. It's a good option.
It's a good option.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. There was a time I saw somewhere that bamboo is also food.
Yes, it's food.
Yeah.
In China. It's
in China, yeah.
Yes. And
how is it? How is this?
It's the bamboo shoot.
Yeah, the shoot, eh?
Yeah, they cook it. They cook it down and they eat it. They say it tastes like mushrooms, they said.
It tastes like mushrooms.
I haven't had it. They boil it. Yeah. Then they fry it. Yes.
Amazing.
And so, you know, maybe one day, that's a meal that we could be having.
Yes, you can go collect all the shoots
and then sell it and spice it.
Yeah, because I watched once in a documentary that it's actually food.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned also the single-use plates. Mm.
So when we're talking about single-use utensils, we're talking about the plates, the forks, and the spoons usually, and the knives that people are using in events, like weddings. And so people generally are currently and actively using plastics, right?
Yeah.
And those that are using paper, the paper plates, they complain that they don't want to use it because it's flimsy.
It's floppy like this.
Bamboo is a bit stronger than that, and it has the ability to be more structured, and so you can actually make like plates and forks and knives and whatnot out of them.
Have you already developed a prototype?
There's already like samples in the market.
One of the players is already doing it. What is the infrastructure you need to produce it? Is there a small machine?
That would be more on the items that would require small machinery.
Yeah.
On getting funding for this,
yeah,
I would be wanting to do an investment, credit investment, a loan, that then I shall be able to pay back with the proceeds from the sales.
A way you're seeing that there shall be income?
First line of the business will be to sell to the other players in the market, the other companies that already have machinery, those are the ones that are selling, the ones that are doing the floorboards, and the ones that are doing the toothpicks.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm. And the skewers. Those ones already have the machinery.
They already have the machinery, and they have a
production line and a demand. And one of them told me that if all the factories went 100% production, we would run out of bamboo in 3 weeks.
Oh,
we don't have enough bamboo in the country to sustain those things 100 like full time. So the sort of capacity we're working on, I foresee already having products that are not necessarily this single-use utensils. I foresee having to start with other products to prove income generation to do this.
Perhaps you could share with us from the point by which I acquired the bamboo seeds,
mm-hmm.
and we realize it's not easily available, the seedlings.
Mm-hmm.
What is the process up to the 70 years when it's now produces seeds?
So the seeds are not easily available, but thankfully there's a huge number of players, as I mentioned, there's 6-7 players in the country that, and including myself, that now have the seedlings. Mm-hmm. So if you look for this, and Kefri also, they have a seedling production site. So if you look for the seedlings, you'll find them. And so depending on where you're sourcing this seedling, you'll get it. And the first thing you do is you dig a very deep hole, the same one as the avocados, about 1 meter diameter and about 0.5 meter depth. And then you're planting that. And there's generally no farm inputs that you need to put in, you know. If you have any organic fertilizer laying around, you can throw that in. But it's, you know, you don't need to put the farm inputs. And as a farmer, your responsibility is to just make sure that it does not dry for the first year.
Okay.
For the first year, your job is to make sure that it does not dry.
Does it need a lot of rain?
Not necessarily.
Yeah.
Depending on the species, generally, not necessarily. But, you know, if you're not getting any rain, watering once a week is not. Just making sure it's not dead.
Yeah.
It doesn't dry out.
Once a week.
And after the first year, once you have more than 3-4 shoots that have come out of that, you can forget about it.
Yeah.
Because it's a hardy plant.
Yes.
Does not require weeding, does not require pruning, does not require any of these careful things you're doing. And so what it'll be doing for the next 3 years, once the root system has matured, is when now it'll be shooting up. And then after that, that's from years 2 and 3. And then from it matures anywhere from 3 to 5 to 7 years.
Okay.
And then now it's ready for harvesting. And so you're harvesting, as I mentioned, every 6 months.
6 months.
For anywhere from 30 to 70 to 120 years. The species I was talking about, the gigantic species, is the one that has a 70-year maturation period.
Yeah. And you said you're harvesting like how much? 6 poles?
6 to 10.
6 to 10
or
poles.
Or more.
Yeah.
Every 6 months per plant.
Per plant, yeah.
Per plant every 6 months for 70 years. And then generally, usually the bamboo plant will flower.
Yes.
And then you collect the seeds and then it dies.
Wow. It will flower at 70 years.
Yes, it flowers towards the end of its life.
Oh, there has to be some reason why God made it that way.
There definitely has to be.
There has to be a reason.
Yes. And I don't know how we've done the traditional propagation. You know, you don't necessarily have to buy the seedling, because once you have them, you can plant an offshoot, you know, of that one bamboo that you had.
You
can split it and plant.
Plant again.
Hey.
And is this the kind of seedlings that you're getting from that the Kefri have?
Kefri has both. It has both options. It has both the offshoots and it has both, like, from the seed. The senior members in this industry that I've spoken to sort of generally recommend doing it from a seed, because then you know where you started. You know at what year of...
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
because you can be splitting a tree. You can be splitting a bamboo that is almost at the end of its life, of its genetic life. But when it's, you know, a seedling or a seed, then you can control and you know exactly the history of this tree.
Hope you're now intrigued by the potential of the bamboo. That concludes the first part of our conversation with the remarkable Laura Koech. Join me, Maslin Nyambala, next time as we delve even deeper into how this sustainable practice can shape our future.
Thank you for listening to the Africa Speaking Podcast. Join us in our next episode, brought to you by Twiza Communications in partnership with Forum Sieve. For any comments and views, you can reach us through our website, www.africaspeaking.org. You can also reach us on Facebook, Twiza Communications, or on our X handle, @twizacoms. You can also write to us on email, info@africaspeaking.org.